Do you ever catch yourself mid-email at work and think, wait, I'm literally trading chunks of my one and only life for glowing numbers on a screen that aren't actually real and that I don't really own and probably don't understand? Welcome to the grand illusion of money and work and the whole absurd circus. So, if aliens landed tomorrow and asked why humanity is slowly rotting like forgotten bananas in the produce aisle and spending its prime years trapped in cubicles under fluorescent purgatory lights, we'd have to level with them. Well, you see, we hand over our most precious, non-renewable resource, time, for invisible points in a fake economy designed by people who mostly just want our houses or cars or whatever when we can't pay the invisible points back. The thing is, money is not some natural law like gravity or the slow death of houseplants. And it doesn't drip from trees or bubble up like a miracle oil. Money is a human invention. Right up there with edible underwear and turd-shaped soap. Scented soap. Someone just made it up. And the rest of us collectively nodded and said, sure, why the hell not? So if we look back in time, for centuries we were fed the fairy tale that money evolved naturally from barter because apparently humans got tired of trading livestock for root vegetables and wanted something more efficient, understandable. But David Graeber, the anthropologist who wasn't afraid to ruin your childhood economics, he revealed the real deal in his book, Debt, the First 5,000 Years. So the premise goes that most of our history consisted of humans living in tangled webs of mutual obligation. Basically, you gave what you could, you took what you needed, you know, no coins or bills, no credit card fees, just messy, awkward, but beautiful human relationships and interactions. But here's what they skip in your high school econ class. Money is basically a mass hallucination. And it only works because we all agree that it does. So imagine Santa Claus, but instead of presents, he gives you crushing debt and a soul-sucking 9-to-5 that leaves you wondering if you ever actually lived. All right. So, just when you thought money was a bad joke, welcome to the sequel. Money. The magic trick nobody asked for. So the economist Richard Werner, the guy who gave us the term quantitative easing, also known as printing money without the messy ink and paper, he spent years trying to explain what most economics textbooks awkwardly avoid, like a root canal. According to his credit creation theory, most of the money in our economy isn't printed by governments or stolen from some treasure chest. It's literally conjured into existence by private banks the moment they press enter on a loan. Okay, so picture this. Let's say you stroll into a bank asking for a $300K loan to buy a house. They don't crack open a vault filled with gold bars or bundles of cash. They don't even shuffle money around from some secret stash. They just type the number into your account like a sorcerer casting a spell, and voila, new money pops into existence out of thin air. Crazy, right? But that's it. No rabbits, no top hats, just a blinking cursor and the complete illusion of wealth. Now, here's the punchline. You then spend the next 30 years or so paying interest on this phantom money. In other words, you just bought yourself the privilege of renting your own imaginary funds from the financial wizards. I'm imagining the Bank of Saruman or the Bank of Voldemort right now. Now, this isn't a conspiracy theory cooked up in your cousin's basement. Werner's research actually spells it out. And so does the Bank of England's own 2014 report. The majority of money is ultimately in the form of credit. Or ghost money, I guess. And that lives and dies with your debt. It's fake from the moment it's born, and it's chained to your lifetime repayments. And David Graeber digs even deeper into this rabbit hole. For most of human history, money wasn't shiny coins or stacks of bills, it was debt. And it turns out that money, at its core, is a social contract. It's like a story that we all agree to tell each other so we don't have to live like cavemen trading goats for potatoes. So Graeber's kicker is that money isn't some objective mystical force. It's more like a tall tale backed by power and trust, or at least the illusion of both of those. And Werner's mic drop, that whole fairy tale gets typed out on a banker's keyboard every time someone takes out a loan. Okay, now, if you're still with me, here's a little secret nobody drops at polite dinner parties, unless they're three drinks in and feeling dangerously honest. A whole lot of jobs aren't real. And by not real, I mean, there's some ghost payroll glitch, though those do exist. I mean, they're glorified busy work designed to keep us chained to desks or whatever, pretending that we matter. So David Graeber nailed this nonsense in his book, Bullshit Jobs, which I highly recommend reading. His thesis states that vast swaths of the workforce exist purely to keep the illusion of work alive, not to actually produce anything useful. And if half these people disappeared tomorrow, society wouldn't collapse. It might even get a little less annoying. I mean, you know the characters. The middle manager whose entire job seems to be forwarding emails like a human spam filter. Or the innovation consultant churning out 40-slide death by PowerPoint presentations about synergy, but couldn't innovate their way out of a wet paper bag. Or how about the person who's basically paid to stand next to a machine that runs itself just in case, which of course never happens. And by the way, we'll probably be seeing a lot more of this example with the influx of AI. Now, I don't mean to pick on these folks, and I'm not trying to be harsh. I don't really fault these people for working these jobs. In the bigger picture, they're ultimately just victims of the system, and they're being manipulated. So, Graeber says that none of this is a glitch. It's actually the whole damn operating system. Which means that we've been brainwashed to believe that working nonstop is a moral virtue. And if you don't work, you're just lazy scum. So instead of asking, does this job need to exist? These companies crank out more pointless positions to keep employment stats looking pretty. And of course, to keep us exhausted enough not to really notice. And the irony is that these nonsense jobs often actually pay better than the people actually keeping the world turning, such as, the farmers, nurses, mechanics, plumbers, etc. So, yeah, the puppet master's drawing seven figures while arranging corporate retreats to discuss growth strategies, they make more than the folks who actually grow the food or collect the garbage. You know, the essential workers. And therefore, real value gets flipped on its head and buried in a dumpster fire. And here's where it all loops back to the great money illusion. If most currency is conjured from thin air, and a huge chunk of jobs exist just to shuffle that imaginary cash around, then guess what? We're not running an economy. We're starring in an elaborate theater production where it seems that the plot is to keep everyone seated, keep the curtains drawn, and, you know, convince the audience that this tragicomedy is reality. And it becomes a kind of metaphysical drama. Now, here's the thing about living in an economy built on smoke and mirrors and financial fairy dust. Eventually, you start feeling like you're made of smoke and mirrors too. And it's not just your job that's meaningless, or that your product might as well be a ghost. It's this creeping suspicion that you are ultimately meaningless. You got a full calendar stuffed like a Thanksgiving turkey, and your inbox looks like a battlefield. But if someone gave you a pop quiz and asked, what did you actually do today? You'd probably have to squint, mumble, and cobble together some half-baked story. So psychologists call this role incongruence. Basically, it's the quiet freakout that happens when the work you do and the meaning you crave are planets apart. Imagine running a marathon on a treadmill set to cosmic dread. You're exhausted, sweaty, and utterly nowhere. It's not just burnout, it's existential burnout. So it's the kind that makes you wonder if having a quote-unquote career is just socially approved Sims gameplay where you control a pixelated version of your own soul. So Gallup keeps telling us year after year that most workers worldwide aren't just bored. They're sleepwalking through their jobs like zombies in khakis. And some smart folks out there think that this explains why anxiety and depression rates spike among people who, on paper, have it all. Western civilization, anyone? So, we basically swapped hunting and gathering in small, tight communities for hunting and gathering reasons to give even the tiniest damn. And unfortunately, the trophy's missing. And we're definitely not living in small, tight communities anymore. And then there's the identity crisis buffet. When the system consists of work that's mostly a sham, and money itself is like an elaborate hoax, your worth basically gets pegged to nonsense. Performance metrics, personal brand, career trajectory, it's all more or less smoke signals in a financial fog. And when those numbers tank, it's not just a bad day at work, it feels like you've actually failed at existing. And why is this exactly? Because, well, the work is hollow and there's no proud monument to your efforts. There's no bridge you built or field you harvested. No novel your grandkids will pretend to read. There's just a graveyard of unread PDFs and PowerPoint slides doomed to be deleted the moment you walk out that door. And your so-called legacy, it's just a digital ghost town on some forgotten shared drive. So fake work, it doesn't just steal your time. It robs you of meaning. Insidiously eats away at that primal need to feel useful and connected. And then mix that with a monetary system that's basically monopoly on steroids. And we've got the perfect recipe for psychological alienation. Fake work, making you doubt your place in the universe. Fake money, making you doubt the value of anything you do. And This whole circus is making you wonder if we're all just extras in a screwed up play where the audience already left. All right, so you've peeled back the curtain and you realize money is mostly smoke and mirrors and a dash of financial voodoo, and that most jobs are just busy work to keep the illusion from unraveling. Now what? Do you just toss your laptop in a bonfire, grow a beard, and become a forest hermit? Well, actually, that doesn't sound too bad to me. But if that sounds like too much work, even by this system's standards, I get it. Nonetheless, there are other routes that do not require you to renounce civilization entirely or become something of a techno-Luddite prophet or whatever. You don't have to quit your job tomorrow and go full caveman and torture credit cards. I think sometimes the most effective way to stick it to the system is just quietly exist without making a scene and basically just refuse. Just say no. It's a lot of times it's more about what you don't do than what you do. And look, I know it's easier said than done. But, you know, guard your time like it's the last slice of pizza at a party nobody wanted to come to. And, I don't know, maybe stop answering those late-night emails and skip the third Zoom call that could have just been a damn email. Clear some space. And not just in your closet, but in your brain and your calendar. Because the less clutter you carry, the less likely you are to lose it completely. You know, there's a lot of little things we can do that add up to big things. You know, I'd suggest finding some hobbies and some friends, though I know that's difficult these days. But look, anything that exists outside this relentless productivity circus is worth pursuing. I would read books that make you question the whole damn charade, as opposed to the ones that tell you how to hustle harder and faster into burnout. And go outside and touch grass, as the kids like to say these days. I'm serious. You know, just being in nature alone can change your perspective. And the more often, the better. I firmly believe that connecting with the natural world can make you realize the ultimate insignificance of humanity's convoluted web. It starts to change your brain chemistry. And, you know, it does give you some relief and some recognition of how temporary all of this shit is. I mean, look, for me personally, nature has been a great form of therapy. Now, look, all that being said, this isn't necessarily about totally dropping out and disappearing from society. Though I know many of us would love to do that. It's more about carving out those tiny moments where the simulation glitches and you remember you're just a messy, flawed human and not just another hamster spinning your wheels in some corporate maze. And don't fool yourself into thinking we're meant to be lonely little cogs in this machine, or just faces on a never-ending Zoom grid or something. I think real life happens in semi-chaotic, inconvenient communities. Real communities. So I would try to find or make places where people actually help each other, not just tap a button and move on. Think barter, skill swaps, mutual aid. Support your local farmers market or those weird time banks and alternative currencies that aren't about squeezing blood from the productivity stone. And, you know, whatever you do, find some other weirdos who see the bullshit too. Because while your solo rebellion is important, I still think it's also worthwhile to connect on some level. You know, I know there's a great deal of isolationism these days, and I get it. You know, I do that myself, and I think there's a fine line between connection and isolation and finding the right balance. I mean, look, let's face it. You know, trying to escape this whole rigged game on your own, it's kind of like yelling at a hurricane. The whole thing's stacked against us, and the house always wins unless we find a way to rewrite the damn rules. Or just don't play them. You know, try to, again, refuse it and just say no. Opt out. You know, I wish we could all just stand up and, you know, demand that these banks stop pulling money out of thin air like some dark magic trick. Or just, you know, stop using them altogether. You know, I think we should support ideas and policies that care about people's well-being instead of obsessing over GDP like it's some kind of global midlife crisis. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Systemic change, it's slow and painful, like crawling through molasses with broken knees. Nonetheless, history has shown that impossible things become inevitable when enough people decide they've had enough. And knowing that the whole thing's a rigged circus is both a curse and a weird kind of gift. You can either cry about it or laugh until you're crying about it. And money and work, they're just made up games, not actual laws of the universe. So, in truth, we're like actors in a play, equal parts absurd and tragic. Own your part without drowning in guilt, because we're all in on the act, but the pen is ultimately in our hands, regardless. And, you know, if you can laugh at the madness and the insanity of it all, I think that's your armor. Because the simulation only works if you believe it's real. I think the best rebellion might just be refusing to take it seriously. So yeah, we're stuck in this rather grand cosmic joke together, but we don't have to be mindless extras in it. I think we can slip backstage and catch our breath and maybe rewrite a line or two. Set some boundaries, build real connections, push for actual change, or just, I don't know, laugh into the void and refocus your attention. Maybe even by embracing the fakeness, we stumble onto something real. Even if only for a little while. So, yeah, we're all caught in this grand farce, you know, chasing phantom money, pretending busy work is purpose, and calling it adulting. And when I think about it, maybe civilization's masterpiece is selling us a system that's part joke and part prison, well, trying to fool us into believing that it's neither. But maybe the real victory isn't escaping. It's just learning to dance on the edge of the absurd and laughing in the face of meaninglessness. And ideally, stealing back pieces of your life before they vanish into the void. Because when everything's fake, I think your own sanity is the most real thing you've got. And if you're still here, maybe that's enough of a reason to keep going. All right, that's all I've got. Thanks for watching.